Hi, folks. Before we start the podcast, just to give you a quick idea of what is coming over the next 24 to 48 hours, we have a range of podcasts with members of the Global Alliance for Tax Justice, including the regional networks of TAFJA, TGNA, and RJFLAC. Why it's important is because they have launched a petition, and essentially that they're calling on civil society organizations from around the world to reject the forthcoming G7, G20, OECD tax deal for reasons that will be outlined and made clear in the podcasts. We're very grateful to be able to collaborate with them and continue to do this work. It's terrific that so many people get to hear the other side and not just the hand-wringing over Ireland's 12.5% sacrosanct tax rate. Again, I hate to be the other guy as well, but we can't keep these podcasts going without support. So if you think they're of benefit, if you get something out of them, please give something back. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's the price of a cup of coffee on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It really helps us out. Thanks and enjoy the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking about the internationally acclaimed deal for a minimum corporate tax rate. And while we sit in the global in the global north, and we pat ourselves on the back, and much of the coverage seems to be in terms of this as a historic deal, what it really means in a global sense, it's supposed to be a global deal. And you know, we'd love to test that today. I'm joined by my co-host Martin McMahon. Martin, how are you keeping?
Not too bad. Hello to everybody. This is going to be an interesting conversation, Tony. We've touched on it already before, so I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, it is. I'm actually delighted to be able to do this. We are joined by Hoang Thao. She's director of ActionAid Vietnam and involved the People's Movement on Debt and Development. And Chennai Mukumba, who's policy researcher and advocacy manager of the Tax Justice Network in Africa. Listeners to the podcast will know we've dealt over the last number of months with the Global Alliance for Tax Justice and the great work they've done. We've spoken to Caroline, we've spoken to Graziella. So we're continuing to look at this, and we will be speaking to other people from the network in the wider scheme of this podcast. But I want to start, if I may, with you, Thao, and thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. This so-called historic deal, we're being told, in particularly in Ireland, you know, that this is something that it's a once in a generation change. It'll happen now, and that's the end of it. What does that? But in terms of inequality and actually baking it in, what do you make of the deal yourself? And how does it? And what are your reflections on it?
Thanks, Tony and Martin and colleagues for giving me this chance to join you today. Yeah. In fact, we can call it historic because it is historically a new law to many of us. Because maybe in some country, maybe particularly in Ireland, you are not taxing corporation, because the tax in your country may be less than 5%, less or sometimes 0%. And you are so proud of it. But we at the internationally developing country need tax to ensure the development and ensure that the public fundamental public services are delivered. So to us, it's really a big disappointment, because this 15% is actually 10% lower than the rate that we are taxing right now in Vietnam. And in general, it is actually a new law. Not supporting any developing country, because this is a race to the bottom. We all know that the corporate tax rate in average in Africa is 28.5%. In Asia is 20.6%, and Europe is 20%. So yeah, it's a historically disappointing rate, and obviously it's not helping the inequality to improve, and in fact it reinforced the inequality, because the corporation are actually paying even less tax than they are paying right now. And it means that the government doesn't have any additional resources for redistribution, which makes inequality a bit less.
So what you're effectively saying, Tao, is that this rate is less than the current rate, which so in that race to the bottom, it actually means less money to pay for social services, social protections, and the needs of, say, healthcare and education. I think it's important that I repeat that, because our Irish listeners are going, well, we have corporations who pay, you know, 2% because they do a certain deal, or but our 12.5% is our baseline. And Chennai, if I can go to you and ask you for your same question, if you don't mind, what do you think of the deal and how it's been framed as this historic deal for that will mean that the world has acted and started to avoid what we call tax abuse? How do you feel about it?
Well, I think, can you hear me? I'm not sure if I...
Yeah, we got you clear. Yep.
Clear. Fantastic. Okay. I mean, it's definitely, I guess one would say, historic in that we are starting to see discussions around global tax reform. But that's where its historic nature ends. The reason it has received so much pushback from not only civil society from the global south, but even in fact civil society from the global north, recognizing its inequality in terms of, you know, what it's proposing, but also countries, is because of that, right? It will not be promoting a global tax system that is inherently fair and will have benefits for all countries, particularly those in the global south. The issue that has caught most of various stakeholders' attention is this particular issue around this global minimum tax rate. I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, there's a larger discussion. There's the two-pillar process that's currently in conversation. But what has currently captured everyone's attention is this particular component of the second pillar, which is looking at the global minimum tax rate. Now, the reason it's such an important conversation, particularly for countries from the global south, is because corporate income tax represents a much higher share of tax revenues, right, and GDP in developing countries than in rich countries, right? So if what's being proposed is not inherently fair, particularly for countries in the global south, it has the potential and will unfairly have negative impacts on countries in the global south than those in the global north. And by this, I mean that countries in the global north will have more benefits arising from this than countries in the global south. Specifically, when you're taking a look at African countries, corporate income tax is relied much more than countries in the OECD, for example. African countries, 16% of total tax revenue is drawn from corporates, as compared to 9% in OECD countries. So when you take a look at the details of what's currently being proposed, it's historic in nature, given that, you know, it's a conversation that in fact developing countries have been pushing for a long time, but the way in which it has happened is not taking cognizance of the issues that global south countries are facing and the current context that are necessary to ensure that the deal in itself is fair and equal, and also in the same vein benefits global south countries.
Can I come in on that? I think it's really important that again, listeners understand what we're talking about here. We're talking about this in the context of, because the global south has been pushing for this. They've been pushing in ways that, in effect, you know, the US is saying, well, there's a lot of profits domiciled elsewhere offshore that we would like repatriated home. There's Germany, there's France, there's other countries looking around, and they're saying, well, we'd like a slice of this, and you've other countries on the other side like Ireland, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and the likes that were actually facilitating this tax avoidance, tax abuse. And the idea really, it wasn't to actually better the countries that were worse off. It's a bit of a carve up for the already well off countries. Is that fair of me to say?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Research has already shown that developed countries, global North countries, are going to benefit much more than countries in the global South. And this is because, for example, the African Tax Administration Forum indicated that, for example, within the African continent, our corporate income tax rates range between 25 and 35%, right? And what the global minimum tax rate is supposed to help reduce is the shifting of profits, right, to lower tax jurisdictions. And so, for example, if it is agreed that the global minimum tax rate be 15%, we will not see a significant reduction in profit shifting away from African countries by multinational corporations.
And there's an element in that as well, where if a corporation has, I think, more than 700 million in income, that they could distribute their income outside of, you know, spread it around the globe. So they're not actually paying 15% corporation tax. Mm-hmm. It's more of the same. Is there a difference in the coverage that we're getting, say, from the global North compared to the global South? Up in Ireland, it's very much, you know, we will be dragged to this eventually, but it's not good for the country. Mm-hmm. Is there a different coverage coming from the global South?
Absolutely. So when we're talking about this sort of agreed 15%, and we make mention of the fact that it is so significantly lower than the average corporate tax rate within Africa, we then make mention of the fact that the rate is much closer to corporate income tax that is implemented within countries that are recognized as tax havens, right? And so Ireland actually is sort of the case study. You know, so you'll find it by different civil societies, different governments, for example, that are talking about this. The one of the big issues is that what's being proposed is closer to the corporate income tax rates of tax havens and secrecy jurisdictions, right? Rather than it is to the corporate income tax rates of countries that are most in need of this particular tax rate.
But to take that back, and Tao, if I could come to you on that. So the idea that, so for example, you gave me a statistic there, Chennai, you said that 9% of the tax taken generally in OECD countries and 16% in corporate tax take is from developing countries. And I use that word loosely. I'm not very fond of that phrase. But Tao, you've spoken about the people's movement on debt and development and how we move beyond that. What does it mean when you know, somewhere like Ireland, and I don't mean to keep point, just because I'm sitting in Dublin, Ireland is easy to pick on, but there's a good 10 countries at this. What does that mean in terms of actually development agendas if we're moving at 15% and saying this is where we stop, this is what the world does, 15% is where we went to and that's enough. What would that mean for the likes of what you guys are trying to achieve in the people's movement on debt and development?
How to say, it's quite a complicated situation where when we say about the flat 15%, it seems to be a significant decision for many countries. But it's important to recognize that the government is not having an easy situation when it comes to tax the corporation. The corporation always have chance and opportunity to move around their assets and their incomes and revenues around the world to enjoy the cheapest, the lowest tax rate, and tax avoidance in developing countries it's no surprise to anyone. So in India, about 10 billion. Wow. Indonesia over 4 billion, the Philippines over 2 billion every year moving out every year. Are moving out of the country or lost because of the tax avoidance in different ways by multinational corporations. And in Vietnam, during 2010 to 2018, our general Department of Taxation was telling that about 35 trillion dong, which is around $1.7 billion, has been lost because of tax avoidance. So maybe that's a very small amount for developed country, but for yeah. our country, that much money means a lot. In our calculation, the tax that was given as an incentive to three biggest technology companies in Vietnam, including Facebook, Google, in 2018 alone, can actually pay the full year salary for 35,000 nurses. So how can you imagine that? Only three companies and incentive for 1 year and cover the whole salary of 35 nurses and healthcare workers.
35,000.
35,000.
Wow.
And the full year annual income. Annual salary
I think that's a really important thing. We have to, because when you're trying to make it real for people, and Chennai, you might know this because you tried to make it real for people to understand on a base level, what it means is that you can't have, you know, say an operating theater, or you can't have that additional palliative care nurse, or you can't have better education services because of what's gone on here. And Martin made an interesting point earlier that's not been talked about enough, is that you know, if a country is able to redistribute its profits around various countries, it can avoid even the 15%. And so there's loopholes within loopholes.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, I think, so part of the reason as an institution, you know, we work on this issue relating to tax is because it plays such a core role in ensuring the provision of very key public services, you know, within different countries. And domestic resource mobilization is a key tool to ensure, right, the attainment of all of these. In fact, I'm going to say it, the attainment of human rights within, you know, global South countries. And so for us, you know, we are interested in the conversations that potentially do away with countries' ability to raise sufficient resources to cater to their needs of their citizenry, right? And like you've rightly mentioned, without sufficient resources, government are not in a position to provide key social services such as healthcare, right? Such as education, such as infrastructure, such as, you know, for example, social protection services. And unfortunately, when this takes place, the people who are harmed the most, because I think it's so important to think about, you know, the individuals who are right at the back end of this conversation, are often the most marginalized and most vulnerable within our societies. And often these are women, right, who are most dependent on these public services because they don't have as much access to the labor market, right? And so, you know, because of our current system, you know, rely on the government for these services. So the conversation, in as much as it is, you know, global in nature, what I'm trying to point to is the fact that it has implications on the day-to-day lives of individual people.
Can I come in on that? Because you were one of the people who put together the making taxes work for women piece. And I think that's really important because there's always this, you know, we forget that when you say your activism is feminist, that's why, because mm-hmm. often the feminist work is unpaid, unseen, and mm-hmm. and doesn't come up on any tax take. So I think, you know, I'm glad you pointed that out, because it's an important thing that we don't pick up enough on, whether it be, you know, caring in the home or caring for relatives or just some of the many roles that women carry out. And I do know you were the author of that, so I wanted to acknowledge that and point that out. Sorry.
Can I ask about solutions? I mean, other than the obvious solution of having the Global South have an equal place at the table with the 7-8 big countries that are big economic blocks that are deciding this, What solutions are there to make this more equitable?
Well, I think one of the solutions, like you rightly indicated, and I don't want to undermine this because it is very important, is to have a space where developing countries are in a position to equally contribute to conversations. That's a key solution, because you cannot have the richest countries, you know, make a decision that adequately incorporates the context, right, of countries from the global south. And it is this misalignment and lacking of this understanding that is resulting in the deal that we have today. So for us, that remains very key, because even when you take a look at, for example, the statistics, right, for example, that Huang was referring to just now, a lot of the resources that are leaving the continent are actually going to the OECD, right? And so there's, in addition to just a lack of inclusive space, there is also a legitimacy deficit, right, that also needs to be taken into consideration. And so that's why that remains key. But I think in addition to that, another solution is really I think conversations that are just more equitable in nature. Because when you look into the detail of what's being proposed, for example, with this global minimum tax rate, I think, Tony, you spoke to the fact that there's still a lot of loopholes that are benefiting the rich countries, right? But it's almost blatant in its...
It's written into the actual bloody deal.
It's written because, for example, there's this global minimum tax rate, say a 15%, right? And so if you are, as a country, unable to impose this, we then have the income inclusion rate, without going into too much technicalities, that kicks in, which says that if, for example, a source country doesn't, for example, impose the 15%, that delta, that difference, goes to the country where the MNC is headquartered, right? And then it's only the rule following that one which allows the host countries, you know, to maintain that revenue. And so basic questions like, why is it that if, for example, a country doesn't put 15%, it automatically benefits the rich countries, the headquarter countries, right? And there's no proper answer to that. Why? Because developing countries can't sit at a table and make decisions. They will provide proposals, right? But we have seen many proposals not actually being taken on board. So for us, I hear you, Martin, it's not something that we're going to see done immediately, but it is central to the reason why we have such a deal in place at the moment.
Can I just make one point on that? There was no representation from developing countries in effect. This was more or less seven large countries that made this deal. And yes, you're right. They took submissions from, again, what are called developing countries, and that seems to have been, you know, and yet they get to stand up and say, you know, this is great, and we're dragging everybody to the table. Whereas if you look at it in terms of, let's just look at it in numbers terms, it's effectively something like 18% of the world telling the other 82% what the rules are going to be going forward. So it's a bit obscene if we really questioned it properly. Tao, can I ask, Martin asked the question in terms of solutions and what suggestions you'd have. Is there anything that you think we should be advocating for now, or what we should be pushing for? You know, like a couple of things that we could immediately start calling on. And I know the main call from you guys is that this deal gets rejected on the basis of that. But, you know, what other calls are we talking, or would you like to see right now?
So I certainly think the question of solution is fundamentally important, because I believe that everyone knows about the problems and even the root cause of problem, but solution requires not only our awareness, our courage, but also our actions. I do agree with the proposal just mentioned right now by Shania, but maybe in terms of the global level, we hope that there will be some whether it's UN anchor or you know, some global body who can actually enforce at least this minimum 15% of the tax payment. So enforcement is really important. commitment 15%, but you know, when that will happen, whether in G7 or in other countries. That is one. The second is that I do believe that Global South country have to be united and sit together. If we are only looking into G7 to be aware of our need and to give us the mercy, it takes a lot more time. And if we have a group like G77, we sit down and we have our own commitment and we honor that. Let's say the whole 77 countries say that, okay, if the corporates wants to do the operation, the business in our country, you are supposed to pay 20%, 25%, 35% of your revenues from country, then yeah, it will change a lot. In another important aspect, I think it's also fundamental for the corporation to recognize that they are getting the profit from their labor, from their workers. And a lot of corporations are trying not to pay social insurance, trying to run away from paying pension or healthcare for their own workers. And at the same time, they are avoiding tax. And, you know, the government doesn't have money to ensure the public services. And the corporation, they don't do their own legal and moral responsibilities for their own workers. I think that's really, really important. And we as a public, as a people, have to do something about it. And I'm happy that we have this chance to discuss with you. Last but not least, I think the power of the consumers are really, really, really important. If the consumers, instead of buying a gin, you know, for $5 from a company that is not paying tax, and instead, you know, boycotting that company and pay extra, say, $7 or so to demand that, okay, you are supposed to pay tax. Now, whether in your country or in the country that you know, producing this, I think those are important solutions that I'm looking for.
I think, go back to Martin, I know you want to come in, but that idea, and again, it's something that I'm glad you said, because the idea of actually being able to, the consumer has a choice in this as well. The consumer has to make a stand because ultimately we have situations, and again, this is, you know, some of the stuff we do is unpopular within Ireland, because obviously Ireland has is a main player in this, and some of the companies you refer to, their European headquarters are a couple of kilometers from where we sit right now, but the consumer has to make a stand. Martin, sorry, I know you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to look at the global tax situation and not think that this is economic imperialism. It's very difficult to see that this is anything other than economic imperialism. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Just the idea that seven ministers of finance can sit around a table and come up with a global tax rate is almost appalling. We can't have a situation where it's you get to make global decisions because you're the richest, right? Or because, you know, you have the most power or influence within this current, you know, economic system. We need to ensure that it is open, it is much more inclusive, because if it's not, like you've rightly indicated, this is really a second wave of a type of colonization to some degree.
Guys, I am conscious of time. I know I said we do half an hour and we've already gone well over that, but I just want, again, I want our listeners to understand what this means. So, for example, I can point to companies in domiciled in Ireland. This is phenomenal when I look at it. One company here, SanDisk, has a turnover of 4.6 billion and only 30 employees. Mm-hmm. So, Shanai, like, maybe you can talk to that it's not even benefiting the countries in terms of, it's not a benefit in Ireland in terms of job creation. We're, mm-hmm. It's not, it's, we're not 30 jobs. I mean, there's more people working in a petrol station probably over the course of a week. And we're being told, you know, this is our economy is based on it. It's a fallacy in some of the countries that are helping tax avoidance, and it's absolutely destroying countries that are trying to actually better themselves.
Yeah, it's so true, because a significant amount of that revenue, Tony, is being generated within countries in the global south. Because if you take a look at the amount of employment, right, that those companies make use of in global south countries, it often, and like you've just rightly indicated, is much more significant, right? And so we've been advocating for indicators such as that to play a key role in the distribution of tax, right, of tax across countries. If we don't, like I said earlier, you'll find that the countries that are most significantly contributing to the revenues of these companies are not benefiting, right, regardless of the fact that without these countries in the global south, many of these companies would not be in existence or exist in a much at a much smaller scale.
Thank you so much for coming and having this chat with us. As Tony said, we only intended 2.5 hours, but we really could do hours and hours discussing this.
We'll be coming back to this, and absolutely we will.
And we greatly appreciate it. It is very early in the morning where you guys are, and we greatly, greatly appreciate that you take
late in the evening, as the case in Vietnam.
So we're very thankful that you have these conversations with us. These are vital conversations. We're talking about the globe going forward. But it seems that only a certain group get to go forward and the rest stay subjugated. So I think this is a very important conversation. Thanks again to everybody for coming along. And thank you very much for chatting to us here on the Tortoise Shack.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Martin. Really appreciated the conversation.
Thanks, guys. We will be continuing this conversation. We've more coming. So we will, look, folks, just make sure that you raise awareness, because we are certainly a key player in this. I think the estimate is something like six countries represent something like 80% of global tax abuse / tax avoidance. We're one of the key players. Can we please do something about it and raise our voices? Talk to you all very, very soon.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe.